Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I am your host, Mark Tapson. Thanks so much for joining me here at the intersection of politics and culture. Well, it's a brand new day in America. I haven't commented on the presidential election in the podcast yet, but if you haven't heard, you should know that Donald Trump and the Republican Party scored a stunning, massive election victory over the forces of evil. Things are looking pretty rosy for conservatives right now. But of course, as for the real work of reversing the damage done by the far-left agenda and making America great again, we've only just begun, as the late, great Karen Carpenter once sang. And although they suffered a resounding defeat, the left is not giving up or going away. As my friend and colleague, journalist Michael Walsh, is fond of pointing out, the left never rests, they never sleep, they never stop. The left isn't about to back down in their obsessive aim to destroy America, as we know and love her. They are religiously committed in this war, and so the fight goes on. Trump and his team will be facing relentless resistance, both outside and inside the D.C. halls of power, every step of the way. Now, that having been said, Donald Trump has been the president-elect for about 3 weeks as of this recording. He won't even be sworn in for another nearly 2 months, and yet he has already triggered a wave of MAGA momentum that is panicking, if not routing, a Democrat Party in retreat. How much is he winning? Well, let us count the ways. The most significant win, of course, was the election itself, in which Trump not only steamrolled over opponent Kamala Harris by 312 electoral votes to 226, but also led a red wave that resulted in Republicans controlling both the House and the Senate. It was a resounding repudiation of 4 years of Democrat dismantling of American greatness. Trump has already prompted a shift in foreign affairs that will empower our allies and unsettle our enemies, which is exactly the opposite of the deposed Joe Biden's impact. One example is that having promised to end the Russia-Ukraine war by Inauguration Day, Trump has changed the Ukrainian rhetoric and planning in their views about negotiations. That's according to Shelby Magid, the deputy director of the Atlantic Council's Eurasia Center. Magid added that Ukraine, knowing that Trump has won, is beginning to accept that negotiations are going to be a reality. So that is good news. Then there's the panic that Trump has engendered among the deep state traitors and diversity hires of the current administration. Breitbart News reports that the woke leadership of the Pentagon, for example, is in absolute disarray, with generals scrambling in expectation of the incoming administration's purge of those who prioritized diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI, at the expense of combat readiness. Trump's nod to decorated veteran and Fox News host Pete Hegseth, for example, as Secretary of Defense, is causing an absolute meltdown among not only the left, but also among establishment rhinos and petty never-Trumpers like John Bolton, who don't understand that a revolution of unorthodox governance is already underway. Now, at this point, it's very questionable whether Pete Hegseth will be confirmed, partly because of rhino resistance within the party, and partly because he brings a lot of personal baggage along with him that he may not be able to overcome. We will see. Anyway, another unorthodox appointment, one that has Big Pharma quaking in its boots, is health crusader Robert F. Kennedy to head the Department of Health and Human Services. RFK has vowed that the Federal Drug Administration's war on public health is about to end. He warned, quote, "If you work for the FDA and are part of this corrupt system, I have two messages for you. One, preserve your records. And two, pack your bags." Unquote. That also is good news. A reckoning is coming. Even some hardcore radicals in Congress are beginning to read the writing on the wall and are adjusting accordingly. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, or AOC as she is more commonly known, did some stealth editing of her online bio, removing the woke personal pronouns that she once so publicly promoted. Former NCAA swimmer and women's rights activist Riley Gaines gloated over AOC's quiet surrender, stating, "We're winning, and it's glorious." More winning. Actress Eva Longoria has packed up her family and is moving out of this, what she calls, dystopian country. and no one cares, but at least she has the integrity to actually leave the country, putting to shame a whole raft of her Hollywood peers like Barbara Streisand, who threatened to leave whenever an election rolls around, but never followed through. In fact, the only other celebrity I'm aware of who has reportedly confirmed that she is leaving the United States is Ellen DeGeneres. And my response to that is, well, bye. Speaking of celebrities, if this election proved nothing else, it's that they wield precious little, if any, political influence in the Trump era. Indeed, the New York Times reports that old-school celebrities could not move the needle of this election, noting that Hollywood endorsements, once an essential part of a campaign playbook, may have backfired in this election. May have? That's being pretty generous. Kamala's desperate bribery of such former pop culture idols as Beyoncé and Oprah Winfrey scored her nothing but a mountain of campaign debt. In fact, I am giddy with glee to report that a new Rasmussen poll shows that the vast majority of Americans are rejecting celebrity endorsements of political candidates. A full 75% of survey respondents said a celebrity's endorsement of a candidate made no difference or not much of a difference on how they voted. Now, oddly, respondents who identify as liberal were more likely than others to disregard the opinion of a celebrity, with a full 80% of liberals saying a Hollywood endorsement didn't sway their decision this election season. Among conservatives, that figure was only 73%. So that's interesting. In any case, it's over, celebrities. The flyover Americans, of whom you have been so openly contemptuous for so long, are fed up with your elitist, self-righteous hypocrisy. And this can be attributed largely, if not solely, to Trump's influence on the culture ever since 2016. It's over for the legacy media, too. Establishment so-called journalists have exposed themselves as nothing more than activists and state propagandists, destroying what little trust the public had in journalism. For example, my colleague Daniel Greenfield at the David Horowitz Freedom Center notes that MSNBC viewership has crashed and burned in the wake of the election, arguably because leftists are simply burned out on Trump hatred. Ironically, but satisfyingly, Elon Musk's ex-social media platform, once known as Twitter, of course, has emerged as the most reliable source of news today, and there likely will be no going back to the old ways. As a result, many high-profile anti-Trump media hysterics who refuse to acknowledge their irrelevance, like MSNBC racemonger Joy Reid and former CNN staple Don Lemon, in addition to other left-wing notables like LGBTQ champion Jamie Lee Curtis and horror novelist Stephen King, they have shuttered their X accounts to protest Elon Musk's free speech platform. In other words, one of the benefits of the Trump victory is that the trash is taking itself out. More winning. Walmart Monday announced it would pull back from its diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, the DEI, of course, and would remove sexual and transgender products marketed toward children, and will no longer participate in the Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index. The retailer said it will no longer use terms such as Latinx or DEI in corporate communications. Now, the Human Rights Campaign Corporate Equality Index, if you don't know, is an enormously influential national benchmark imposed on corporate policies and practices in order to socially engineer the queering of America. Maybe not so influential now, because Walmart isn't the only corporation waving the white flag as it abandons politicized policies. Last month, Toyota announced it would no longer sponsor LGBTQ parades and events and will no longer promote DEI. Harley-Davidson, Lowe's, Ford Motor Company, Tractor Supply, and Jack Daniels have also left the Corporate Equality Index. At Breitbart News, they quote Alfredo Ortiz, the CEO of the Jobs Creators Network, who wrote in a statement this week, quote, "The defeat of woke capitalism shows the power that conservative groups have when we work together with a single voice. Walmart's elimination of DEI is a stunning reversal from a couple of years ago when seemingly every corporation was putting its woke political interests above its business, threatening its shareholders and employees. conservative groups should take this playbook that defeated woke capitalism and use it to achieve other policy wins, unquote. Indeed, we should. Now, having exulted in a few of the various ways in which America is already becoming great again, I want to turn the focus around and address the left's reaction to the Trump victory. And here's one. Unhinged, quote-unquote, liberal women are undertaking a sex strike, taking themselves out of the gene pool, thank God, by swearing off their sexual promiscuity, getting their tubes tied, and hoarding Plan B morning after pills in order to protest the election victory of a man that they believe will turn this country into a patriarchal Handmaid's Tale horrorscape. Even The View's ringleader, Whoopi Goldberg, has announced that she is joining the sex strike. I cannot fathom how she could possibly consider this to be some kind of a punishment for men. But anyway, speaking of The View, ABC is reportedly scrambling to find Trump-supporting co-hostesses for the inexplicably long-running daytime propaganda fest. If the network had any outside-the-box thinkers among its executives, it would create a conservative counterpart to The View to capitalize on the underserved millions of MAGA women who made their impact felt in this election. But don't hold your breath about that. More unhinged reactions. A group of sad leftists reportedly gathered at Lake Michigan to engage in a primal scream, releasing what was described as their pain and frustration after the election. After shouting at the water for a while, some of them dove in. Seriously, folks, is this the party that we want running our country? Secretary of State Antony Blinken has been holding therapy sessions for White House employees who were upset over Trump's victory. How can we trust the leaders of such a party to run our lives domestically and represent our interests internationally? This is a party that lacks all seriousness, all gravitas, any substance at all to enable us to be taken seriously as a world superpower. This is a party whose agenda is laser-focused on pushing and promoting gender ideology, which is not an agenda taken seriously by any other country in the world, except for maybe Canada and a couple of the most woke captured countries of Europe. Anyway, much to my consternation, but also to my pleasant surprise, in the wake of the Trump victory, the left is folding like a cheap suit, as the old expression goes. Where are the protests? Where is the rioting? The marching in the streets? All of this anarchic chaos that I've been predicting for months? Where are all the masked Antifa bullies? The only explanation I can think of is that the left truly expected to win again. I think they truly believed, despite the panic that they were displaying near the end of Kamala's campaign, that they could beat Trump, at the very least through widespread voter fraud like they did in 2020, and that there would be no need to organize and prepare to set this country on fire to protest and derail a Trump victory. And now we're seeing not only that they were caught flat-footed, but that the psychological blow from this landslide crushing of their dream of electing a quote-unquote woman of color has been so great that the left is just paralyzed with shock and awe. Remember that phrase from the Iraq War, shock and awe? I think the Trump landslide completely overwhelmed them psychologically. In a report called The Resistance Goes Quiet, Axios tried to explain this phenomenon. It quotes Lisa Mueller, a political science professor at McAllister College, saying that female Democrat voters are more disappointed than shocked this time around, that they didn't have the same acute trigger to rush to the barricades that they did the first time. It's very likely that there is some disillusionment with activism, she said. Yeah, no kidding. The co-founder of the Women's March, for example, which was such a force during the first Trump presidency, reportedly said that discussions of a new march are not going over real well. Now, that doesn't mean that widespread leftist resistance and disruption won't make an appearance in time for Trump's inauguration, and in the months and years afterwards. As I said at the outset, the hardcore radical left will not give up. They'll never rest. But at least for the time being, they're so demoralized and mentally unprepared that we seem to have entered a honeymoon period in which all's quiet on the Western Front, as the book title goes. And into that void of Democrat resistance has swept the most encouraging tsunami of optimism that I think conservatives have felt not only since the pandemic, but even during the first Trump presidency. I feel it, I think you feel it too, that the tide has turned on the radical left's political and cultural dominance of this country. It's not simply the feeling that, yay, we won an election. It's the feeling that the red landslide that delivered not only the White House, but the House and the Senate into our hands with a mandate is going to, say it with me, make America great again. According to a post-election survey from CBS News YouGov, only 39% said that America's best days are past, while 50% said the best lies ahead, and 11% chose right now. Those under 30 chose the future by the widest margin, 60%. Those aged 30 to 44 and aged 45 to 64 were about tied, choosing the future at 51% and 49% respectively. Those aged 65 and over came in the lowest at 47%. 68% of conservatives said America's best days are in the future. It's actually kind of shameful. It should be 100% of conservatives. But hey, the fact that more than two-thirds of a political party that was getting pretty despondent and pessimistic under the Biden administration is now bursting with optimism is a pretty good reflection of just what a turnabout Donald Trump has achieved. A full 53% of Hispanics also chose the future, as did a plurality of Black Americans, with 44%. Trump has a 59% approval rating of his handling of the transition, with only 41% disapproving. 55% are happy or satisfied with Trump's victory, and only 44% are dissatisfied or angry. Now that's what I call hope and change. As the esteemed commentator and historian Victor Davis Hanson has written, quote, "We are witnessing an historic counter-revolution after Trump's victory, far different from his first election in 2016. The orthodox and the supposed scripted future are now suspect, and they are likely to be dethroned from the trivial to the existential," unquote. In his piece titled, "The Trump Counter-Revolution, A Return to Sanity," Hanson wrote, and forgive me while I quote at length from it, because he sums things up so well, quote, "The Trump messenger reassured weary citizens that they were not crazy. Instead, they had good cause to be sick of being talked down to by a media, academic, bureaucratic, and political elite that never earned nor deserved such self-appointed status. The FBI, the CIA, and the DOJ, not the massive crowds at rallies, were the ones truly out of control. It is not a thought crime to believe there are two sexes, not three or four or more. No one should be forced to buy an electric vehicle, disconnect their natural gas stove, or submit to racial or gender indoctrination sessions. Americans should speak their minds and write what they wish without worry of being censored, blacklisted, ostracized, doxxed, or shadow banned, or jailed. Campuses are not oases of tolerance, disinterested inquiry, and free expression, but are overpriced indoctrination centers that shred the Constitution and graduate indebted students who know less but are far more biased than when they enrolled." Hanson goes on to say, "Trump and his MAGA appointees promised to slash over $1 trillion from the annual federal budget, disbanding entire agencies. Trump pledges to reform the Pentagon, ending DEI Pentagon commissars and revolving door corporate generalship. Trump promises historic deportations of the 12 million who destroyed the southern border and surged in without health or criminal audits. Trump vows to rescue swamped social services and stop crimes by illegal alien felons. Trump says he will deter enemies without bogging America down in endless wars, and he did just that in his first 4 years as presidency. And maybe more important," Hanson writes, quote, "The Trump revolution is also cultural and social. Shared class interests have replaced race, ethnicity, and gender chauvinism. Athletes of all races are no longer taking a knee in protest of America's supposed systemic racism during the national anthem. Sometimes they celebrate their scoring by doing honorific Trump YMCA golf swing dances on national television. The country no longer must apologize incessantly for its past or present, but can move on, content that it need not be perfect to be better than all the alternatives. The age of flashing pronouns renaming iconic landmarks, statue toppling, trashing the dead, vandalizing with impunity the campus library, or spouting anti-Semitic venom is passing, unquote. That was my friend Victor Davis Hanson summing up the meaning of the Trump landslide. This is historic. I think for the first time in a long, long time, conservatives can say we're winning the culture war. And at this point, it's looking like a rout. Thank God. Speaking of Thanksgiving, a Pew Research Center poll found that a strong majority of Americans still pray and express gratitude during Thanksgiving dinner. Quote, around two-thirds of U.S. adults, 65%, say someone at their dinner table typically says a prayer or blessing. 69% say things they are thankful for, unquote. More than half, 56% to be precise, say someone at their Thanksgiving dinner typically does both of those things. Folks, the left hates family solidarity. They want families to be divided by political rancor and bitterness. They want to drive a wedge between younger and older generations. The left hates the very idea of Thanksgiving Day and tries to deconstruct it, its historical roots anyway, so they can claim our nation is rooted in racism and exploitation. The left is a hate group. It's not the party of joy. It's not the party of unity. It's not the party of anti-fascism or anti-racism. It's a hate group. Now, with that having been said, people are and should be free to have their political opinions. And if those opinions are going to cause division and ill will at family gatherings, where family is immeasurably more important than your politics, especially if your politics is anti-family, then leave those political opinions at home. One of the reasons we're so divided as a nation is that politics is a religion for the left, and they believe that politics should infuse every aspect of our lives. The personal is the political, and the political is the personal, as the left-wing slogan goes. And that's why they can't set politics aside for even one day in order to come together as families, as communities, and as a nation to be grateful for the unprecedented blessings that America has been granted. So if your intention on Thanksgiving Day is to shame your uncle or your grandmother for not sharing the ideological straitjacket you're wearing that's cutting off the flow of blood to your brain, then do one of two things. Either do a little soul-searching and invite a little humility into your heart, or stay home. The happiest of Thanksgivings to you all. God bless you, and God bless this country. And thank you, as always, for joining me here at the intersection of politics and culture. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take so that you can keep up with all the important conversations we're having here. And if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you. The Right Take with Mark Tapson is a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center and Front Page Magazine. Unauthorized reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.